In late 1990s New England, as the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal dominates headlines, Coleman Silk's carefully constructed life unravels with stunning speed. For 5 decades, this distinguished classics professor at prestigious Athena College has hidden an explosive secret. Though perceived as Jewish by colleagues and family, Coleman was born black and has been passing as white since his 20s. The irony cuts deep. A man who fled racial categorization finds himself destroyed by it when he innocently uses the word spooks to describe perpetually absent students who happen to be African American. Despite his protests that he meant ghosts, not a racial slur, the accusation of racism destroys his career and triggers a chain of events ending in tragedy. Coleman's reinvention wasn't impulsive but calculated, a young man's deliberate gamble that whiteness would offer opportunities blackness couldn't. At 26, he saw his racial identity as an impediment to the future he envisioned. The cruel irony? He specialized in classics, a field obsessed with origins, lineage, and cultural inheritance, while methodically erasing his own. To become someone new, Coleman severed all family ties. His mother, who noted he'd been trying to escape almost from the day you got here. His furious brother, who warned him never to show your lily-white face around that house again. He erased a rich heritage, including Continental Army soldiers, Lenape Indians, and Swedish settlers. The hell with that imprisonment, he declared, choosing reinvention over inheritance. Coleman's gamble paid dividends for decades. He married a Jewish woman who never discovered his secret, raised 4 children who believed themselves white and Jewish, and rose to become dean, transforming a sleepy department into an academic powerhouse. His expertise in Greek tragedy gave him insight into human nature, yet he couldn't see the tragic pattern forming in his own life. When his academic community turns against him, Coleman resigns rather than explain. Shortly after, his wife dies, a death he attributes to the scandal, leaving him isolated with his rage and secrets. In the aftermath, 71-year-old Coleman finds unexpected solace with Fania Farley, a 34-year-old janitor at Athena College. Their relationship crosses boundaries of age, class, and education. For Coleman, this connection represents liberation from lifelong constraints. What draws these unlikely lovers together is a mutual desire for authenticity after lives defined by deception. Fania claims illiteracy, another protective fiction, works multiple low-wage jobs, and carries scars from abuse and her children's deaths in a fire. This was the time to quit the quarrel, Coleman realizes, to free himself from conscientiousness and live beyond accusation, indictment, and judgment. The relationship becomes his final act of self-definition, a choice made to follow desire and connection wherever they lead. Les Farley, Fania's ex-husband, embodies the abandoned Vietnam veteran devastated by untreated PTSD. After 2 tours as a helicopter door gunner, he returned to a country that offered fear instead of gratitude. Unlike World War II soldiers, Vietnam veterans had no decompression period, and the VA provided only sleeping pills while Les suffered nightmares so severe he sometimes choked his wife while sleeping. When his children died in an apartment fire while Fania was with another man, Les rushed in, finding them huddled on the stairs, but after rescuing them, attacked Fania's boyfriend in rage. His hatred targeted multiple sources, the government that abandoned him, prospering immigrants, and especially Coleman, whom he viewed as a privileged Jewish professor who'd never faced combat. Meanwhile, Delphine Roux, a young French professor, becomes Coleman's academic adversary. Following the Spooks incident, she portrays herself as defending progressive values against his alleged racism, though her motivations are deeply personal. She grows obsessed with his relationship with Fania, viewing it as exploitation of the weakest possible woman who is drastically inferior to him in every possible way. When Coleman and Fania die in a car crash, possibly caused by Les Farley, though deliberately ambiguous, the Athena College community transforms their deaths into a morality tale. rumors spread rapidly, growing increasingly lurid. The most sensational claim, Fania was performing a sexual act on Coleman when they crashed, proves especially compelling as it fits the predetermined narrative of their relationship as purely carnal. The community swiftly constructs a narrative about Coleman's moral decline that provides a satisfying arc of hubris and punishment, enables collective moral positioning, and offers a cautionary tale about transgressing social boundaries. Yet none of these storytellers know Coleman's racial identity or understand the complex dynamics of his relationship with Fania. The novel concludes with the narrator encountering Les Farley ice fishing at a frozen lake. This final scene shifts perspective from heated interpersonal conflicts to the cold, pristine, natural world beyond human drama. Farley describes his secret lake with religious reverence, a place where the water constantly turns over. It cleans itself. This natural purity attracts him because it's God-made. Nothing man had to do with it. That's why it's clean, and that's why I come here. Coleman's passing embodies America's struggle with identity, an extreme version of self-invention central to the American dream, yet with inevitable costs. By living as white, he gains advantages while rejecting racial definition altogether. The human stain represents our inherent imperfection, the messiness and contradiction no social propriety can eliminate. Each character bears their own stain. Coleman's racial passing, Fania's trauma, Les's violence, Delphine's obsessions. Yet society demands performances of purity impossible to maintain. Coleman's story raises fundamental questions. How much can we choose our identity? How are we shaped by history and social categories? What connects our public and private selves? How can authenticity survive in a judgmental society? In our era of identity politics and cancel culture, these tensions have only intensified. The novel offers no easy answers, only a mirror reflecting America's contradictions and the stains we all carry as we navigate between our true selves and our social performances. The final image is haunting. Farley on his bucket, the only human marker in all of nature, like the X of an illiterate signature on a sheet of paper. The narrator sees a rare vision of purity in our century, a solitary man on a bucket, fishing through 18 inches of ice in a lake that's constantly turning over its water atop an Arcadian mountain in America. This conclusion offers no neat resolution to the novel's moral questions. Instead, it presents human smallness against natural grandeur, suggesting our dramas are absorbed into larger cycles of renewal. The lake's turning water becomes a metaphor for how time eventually cleanses even profound human stains. Can we escape who we are? The novel suggests we're both bound by history, yet constantly seeking transcendence through reinvention. Coleman's tragedy lies not in passing as white, but in believing this could free him from categorization and misunderstanding. His story reveals that freedom has costs, identity is both chosen and imposed, and the stains we hide often become our essence.